This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. This is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hey.
And today we're joined again, finally, part two of the Star Trek movie discussions. Andy's back.
Yay!
Yay! This will now be the most downloaded episode ever.
What?
There's always a spike when it's like, okay, we're talking comic books, and then it's like, Andy's on, and then...
yeah.
I find that very surreal but flattering.
You're a celebrity in a lot of people's eyes.
Q. Mike and I discussed that I'm the Q.
Yes, excellent.
Yeah, yes, you're the Q of Standard Orbit.
Well, Q's back, and she's ready to rant. We made her watch Into Darkness before we recorded the Star Trek original series movies, what, like 8 weeks ago?
I don't know. Blurs together in my mind.
So interested to hear, now that all the emotions have settled down, what happened?
They haven't.
Okay, well, that's good, too. All right, well, first off... You started with this, with Star Trek 2009, didn't you?
Yeah, 2009 is the first Star Trek movie I ever saw. It's the first Star Trek anything I ever saw. I don't know if you remember, but it was kind of a big movie. And it ended up going to see it with a friend of mine in 2009 in the theater, and I liked it. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then I went back and rewatched it after I had watched most of the original series. And I was like, oh, well, this is a different movie than I remember. Because it really does change the viewing experience if you've seen the original series. But I hadn't seen the original series movies at that point either time. So now that I've seen the original series movies, my perspective has changed yet again. So...
So it's kind of interesting, but again, it was a movie which was sort of designed to be accessible to people who hadn't seen Star Trek. So as someone who hadn't seen Star Trek, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I think that they succeeded in that. I mean, I didn't know anything about Star Trek. You guys know better than anyone how little I knew about Star Trek. And I understood everything, and that's really the most important part. It's not like I was lost at any point. So in that, they definitely succeeded in that they made a movie that you could watch without knowing anything about Star Trek and still understand, which I think is kind of tough. So they definitely succeeded there. I enjoyed the movie. I kind of put it on the level of, you know, fun action movie. Which, now that I am more versed in Star Trek, kind of makes me mad. but it was a fun movie, and I enjoyed it, and the friend I went to see it with enjoyed it. And she didn't know anything about Star Trek either, so I guess they got what they wanted, which was crossover appeal.
Mm-hmm. A lot of my friends call it Space Adventure 2009.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's very much a sci-fi action movie, and I think it's a good one. For that, I don't know if it's so much a good Star Trek movie, but like, if you take the Star Trek out, it's a very solid, fun popcorn summer action flick.
Yeah, like the Star Trek is almost a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Like we enjoy, like Mike and I enjoyed it, but we got a little bit more out of it because we were familiar with Star Trek.
See, this is something which I've always found to be very interesting, because the thing that you hear time and again from people, especially, well, I mean, well, from Star Trek fans, is, yeah, it's a good movie, but it's not a good Star Trek movie. And someone needs to explain to me exactly what the hell that means, because of all the things that I hear about Star Trek 09, that's the thing that makes the least amount of sense. That, to me, makes less sense than a monster chasing Captain Kirk into a cave and having old Spock standing there waiting for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it is that it's I think what people mean by that is, like, Star Trek to them is more than that. It's philosophical. It's about deeper things. And they basically just were like, here, things blow up, you know? And yeah. I get that, but I still think it's a decent movie, and I still think that it's a good, it's a fairly decent Star Trek movie. I just don't think it reached the level of the original series movies.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think that people may be misremembering what Star Trek is, honestly, because to me, this has, you know, I mean, certainly as much, you know, philosophically going on with it as your average Star Trek thing. You know, maybe it's not, you know, at Wrath of Khan level or Undiscovered Country level or anything like that, but to me, it definitely does have that Star Trek thing. I think what it also has in addition to that is, you know, top-notch action filmmaking, which is something that I think Star Trek fans aren't necessarily used to, you know? Because, I mean, like, when they try to do, like, top-notch action, you know, we get, well, like, Nemesis or something, which, I mean, or you know, I mean, whatever. I know that you haven't seen Nemesis, but, you know, something along those lines. Let's say Star Trek V, you know, and where it's like, yeah, you guys are really trying hard, you know? Good for you. You get an A for effort, you know? But like, here, it's just like, yeah, no, we know how to make a movie in the 21st century, and we're going to actually do that. You know what I mean? And it's like, we have the money to do that. We've got, you know, everyone who's at the top of their game in terms of this thing. Whereas, you know, usually Star Trek is really good at doing a different thing in terms of style. And, you know, then maybe they're like, well, we need to do something action-y. And they get those people who are really good at that other thing to come in to try to do action. And they're like, honestly, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, similarly, I'm not necessarily sure that the JJ verse people could do, you know, something, you know, pensive like Measure of a Man or something like that. Although I'd love to see what that would look like. But I mean, to me, like, there's nothing about it which says not Star Trek to me. Certainly not more so than something like Star Trek V or Star Trek III or something like that, you know? I mean, does what I'm saying make any sense?
It does. I would say that Star Trek V is pretty philosophical. I mean, like, their whole thing is, like, going to find God, isn't it? That's...
I guess it's pretty philosophical, but also, I mean, just the fact that they're going to find God is about as non-Star Trek as you can get, right?
I agree with you there. I'm just saying, like, it's not like that, because the 2009 has, like you brought up Kirk and the big giant snow beast thing. That's a perfect example to me, like, why? It was like, cool, we can make a snow beast and he can chase Kirk. I mean, you don't need that.
I agree. You know, there's a lot of, I think Bruce Willis refers to it as chuffa. I don't know. But I hope that doesn't mean something bad, but I don't know. Anyway,
you've said it before and we've not gotten in trouble.
All right,
so
we haven't got any complaints, and let's just go with it, you know? But, you know, I mean, like, extra stuff that doesn't need to be there. Yeah, that's fine. You know, but I think that that's true of any movie. I think that's
Uhura's
true
fan dance
of Star Trek. Yeah, Uhura's fan dance. You know, that's not adding a whole lot to the story.
Except for it's giving Uhura something to do.
That's true.
That's true, but hey, this movie found plenty of stuff for Uhura to do, you know.
I don't know about that.
Well, a lot more than any other Star Trek thing has, you know.
I would disagree. I mean, okay, really, all they have her do is Mac on Spock.
Okay, what movie or episode has given Uhura more to do than Star Trek 09 or Star Trek Into Darkness?
Because you have to remember that she translates, you know, that she could speak all those different
levels of Vulcan and Klingon.
Which
and,
is definitely
and
better than having her learn them out of books at the...
Yep.
Yes, that's true. I don't know. She has that moment where she pulls a phaser on that guy, calls her old, and locks him in a closet. That's pretty cool.
And then she disappears for the rest of the movie.
I know.
Like, she's literally not in the rest of the movie.
I know all of that. I just, it annoys me that they had this chance to give Uhura something to do, and what they gave her was a romantic arc. That annoys me. I'm not even saying that you're wrong. I just, it at least Uhura's arcs in all the other movies, with the exception of a really weird out of left field, like, okay, I guess her and Scotty are together now. Most of them are not to do with her romantic life. And even, I don't think I would have such a problem with the fact that her entire journey in the movies is all about basically humanizing Spock. It's not even that she has a romantic arc. It's that it's so one-sided. It's like specifically they gave that to her. It feels like they gave that to her because they didn't know what else to give her. And then also so they could use her as like a mirror for Spock's emotions.
Well, it's kind of like, and I think that I brought this up before on the show, Mike, but the original series movies focus on Kirk, and the series focuses on Kirk with McCoy and Spock, like, showing him, like, making Kirk a more well-rounded character. But I feel like the JJ movies are Spock is the main character, with Kirk and Uhura showing how Spock is a well-rounded person.
I mean, I see what you're saying. I'm not necessarily sure I agree with it. I mean, I think that there is that element to it. I would still say Kirk is the main character, especially in 09. The reality of the situation, which, you know, may be a bitter pill to swallow for some people, I don't know, is that the way that the original series was designed, the way that television was designed back then, is that there were only three main characters. There was Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and everyone else was filler, you know? They were essentially, you know, set dressing. And they filled roles and they said lines which needed to be said, which is why, you know, Uhura always says, hailing frequencies open, Captain, and that's it. Because that's literally all that they needed her to do in that show, in that story. And I think what people tend to do is apply sort of like 80s and 90s and aughts television philosophies or television making to that 60s show, and that's not the way that shows were back then. You know, by the time we got to the Next Gen era, you know, Troy gets an episode, Worf gets an episode. Worf gets like 50 episodes, but you know what I'm saying? Everyone gets their moment to shine, and that's not what it was about back in the 60s. That's not what the original series was about, and because of that, those characters really didn't have anything going for them because there was no need. There was no place for it, really.
Yeah, but you know? We're talking about 2009 now.
Yeah.
Right. Now we're talking about 2009. So you're taking, right, and this is another problem, okay? You're taking that 80s and 90s sensibility applied to a 60s show, which was weekly, and now you're trying to fit that back into a movie box, which more closely resembles what they were doing in the 60s. If anything, they should ignore it and make these guys window dressing again. I'm talking about from a storytelling standpoint, because the thing that we see happen, you haven't seen this yet, but I'm not spoiling anything. I mean, it's pretty obvious that they would do this. The thing that we see happen in the Next Generation movies is you've got these seven characters who now people have come to love because they have had their moments to shine. They're not just answering the phone. And now all of a sudden you've got 2 hours to try to cram them all in. And it's
including
like,
Worf.
Including Worf, who shouldn't even, who may or may not be there logically. And it's like, well, how are you going to do that, you know, without it feeling forced? And you can't. And I think what 09 did was, since, like Drew is saying, it's trying to show what the character of Spock is. I mean, all of these characters, You know, even Spock and Bones, to some extent, were supposed to be a reflection of Kirk. So to be able to, you know, beef up this person's role, even if it means basically making them a foil for this other character, you know, I mean, that to me is perfectly fine and valid and a better use of that character than the original series. Does that make any sense? I'm not saying that it's a tremendously well-rounded character or anything, but I'm saying, like, given all the factors, I mean, what they did with, at least Uhura, I think, was really pretty solid. What they did with Chekhov, maybe not so much, you know? But, you know what I'm saying?
I do. I'm frustrated because she's the only woman.
Yeah.
And it just, it's frustrating. That's all I'm saying. And I wanted her to do cool stuff. And she didn't even have to do a lot of cool stuff if they had given her one hero moment. Because they gave everybody else a hero moment. You can't deny that.
She got a hero moment.
What hero moment did she get in 2009?
She was the one who figured out that the Romulans were sending the signal, right? So she's the one who got the information that
was presented to Pike by Kirk? Is that what you're talking about? That moment?
Well, but it was presented to Kirk by Uhura.
I'm sorry. That does not track.
I mean, chain of command. Whatever.
No, 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 no. And I'm not even talking. That's not a hero moment. That's like she was there. She was standing there while Kirk had a hero moment.
Okay. To me, I saw the hero moment being Uhura's. Kirk was the one who was like, I heard her say this thing, and now I'm hearing you say this thing, and it's all good.
And it doesn't even count. I'm sorry. No, because what I'm talking about is that moment, and you know exactly what I'm talking about because you know movies, where they focus on one character, and like the music swells, and there's like a cool shot behind them, and they are a hero for that moment. Sulu gets that moment with his sword. You know, even Chekhov gets that moment when he's like trying to save everybody with the transport and he's running through the hallways. Those are hero moments. That is Uhura being like, Kirk's report is accurate.
Okay, two things with that. One, I know what you're saying, and you know, that may be true. That may be true. Maybe she didn't get her hero moment in that sense. Second thing that I will say is those hero moments, extremely forced and stupid, and none of them work. And the only one that I even remotely respond to as being a real thing, and the only one where when I'm sitting in the theater, I'm like, yeah, you go get them, was Uhura's.
Yeah,
so even though
me.
Even though the music didn't swell and she didn't get like one of those, like I always think of, you ever see Serenity? I'm sure you have.
Yes, and what I'm thinking of is River in front of
when
the
door opens and she's standing on top of the thing, and you're like, oh my God, that is such a self-referential shot. That looks like something right out of a comic book. That is the most beautiful shot ever. Why the frack is it in this movie?
No, see, you know? For me, that kind of shot is when I like pump my fist. I'm like, woo, I love those.
That's what you're supposed to do. For me, it was, you know, and I mean, I saw that movie with Max, the two of us sitting in the theater. That happens at an advanced screening. Everyone goes, woo. And we look at each other and we're like, that is the dumbest crap we've ever seen.
Well, I guess we'll just have to agree to disagree on that particular.
Like, to me, I
love
like,
them.
Yeah, Uhura, that was great. But like what's his name? Chekhov is running through the hallways and doing this thing. I'm like, why is he running? When Sulu is fighting the dudes on the thing, I'm like, why is he doing this? Why is he doing the acrobatics?
What I really appreciate about the novelization for Star Trek 2009 is that Chekhov, when they're falling, Chekhov's like, I can do that. And he, you know, swipes the transporter controls over to the panel that he's sitting at.
Yeah.
And he beams them from there. So he doesn't run through the hallways like an idiot.
That makes more sense.
And also, Sulu's big moment where he pulls out a sword. Why the hell does he have a collapsible katana when he's a fencing expert?
No, he, you know, whatever. I mean, that to me is fine, you know, because he's supposed to be a sword fighter and, you know, whatever. If you're going to be fighting a Romulan on a satellite dish or something like that, you're going to want a katana because the fencing sword is not going to cut it. And, you know, I mean, there, you know, some people, I guess, might call it racist. But to me, there's nothing racist about paying homage to your heritage or whatnot. And also, like, I mean, why would you use any sword other than a katana? Because they're the best, right?
Well, in the novelization, he takes it from a Romulan.
That's dumb. He'd have his own katana. He'd have his own collection.
Why would a Romulan have a katana?
Yeah,
it wasn't a katana in the novelization.
I'm not buying that. You know, I liked what I originally thought was Sulu's hero moment, where he's like, "I'm gonna fly this ship," and then it doesn't fly, and he's like, "Oh, sorry, yeah, okay, now I'm gonna fly this ship." Like, that's how you do one of those hero moment things.
Parking brake.
You know, I mean,
yeah. But, okay, so. Do we want Uhura to have a moment like River on top of the pile of Reavers?
I do.
Like, do we want her to have a huge action moment?
It doesn't necessarily need to be an action moment, but I just want, like...
It's hard when she's a communications officer and a translator.
Well,
she
here's
can't
the
have,
thing,
like, a big
and we haven't talked
moment.
About Into Darkness yet, but they right. almost did that in Into Darkness.
They almost
they
did,
They almost
yes.
gave her that moment,
they were,
and then
they were
undercut
so close.
It. And I was like, curses! Because it's not even so much like, okay, they all need one, although that's one of my favorite things about that movie, to be honest, is like each one of them gets this moment, and I'm like, woo! Which apparently we just disagree about those moments in general, which is fine, but they don't give her one.
Uhura's hero moment is way more rewarding to me than anyone else's, because it at least feels like something that, you know, she did... which is related to her and not just something where it's like, we need to show how awesome they are and whatever. So that's that.
So how about Into Darkness? There's more female characters in Into Darkness, Andy.
You're trolling me right now.
No, I'm not.
You are 100%
trolling.
Why
don't you tell me about all the female characters in Into Darkness?
Oh, my. Can we talk about something other than female characters? Do I get to talk about anything else?
It's your thing.
I know
what
it
did
is.
What did you think about the movie in general?
Yeah. Let's do that, because a lot of people see it as a ripoff.
It's horrible.
Harsh words.
Well, okay.
Any particular reason?
I should clarify my it's horrible. I wasn't super into the movie. From the beginning, basically, I just don't think it works as well. Like, the things that I liked about 09 were basically the character moments. And, you know, I really liked how they paralleled Kirk and Spock in the first movie and, like, shown why these two guys would have such a friendship. I really love Spock in that first movie. But then coming into the second movie, I don't know, it just wasn't working nearly as well, but I wasn't, like, hating it or anything. I was just kind of clicking along. And then you got to remember, too, that I had watched Wrath of Khan, like, I don't know, 2 weeks before this. So that was fresh in my memory, and my emotional reaction to that movie was fresh in my memory. And there was this exact moment where I realized that they were about to do what they did. And it was like they have Spock on the bridge, and he kind of, oh my God. And he starts running down the hallway again, running with the hallway running. And I'm just like, wait a second. Wait, no, they wouldn't do that. Would they do that? No, they wouldn't do that. And then like they did the whole scene again. And I was like, what? It really, really, really made me mad. And I can't even exactly tell you. Well, maybe I can tell you why. Mostly it just felt like they're like, how do we get Trekkies to really emotionally have this be emotionally resonant with them? We know we'll take the most heartbreaking moment in all of the original series, everything, and do it again. And it just felt very manipulative. It didn't work. For whatever reason, it didn't work for me. I know that there are some people who found it very touching, but for me, I was just like, No, the whole time I was like screaming no to the, like the heavens, and so it made me really upset. And then like from that moment on, that just made me cynical about the entire ending. So like from that moment on, nothing worked for me after that because I was so upset over the way they pulled this off. And there's this moment where they gave Spock the Khan line, and I was like, what?
That is no.
No. Okay. No. Why? Poor Zachary Quinto. He's so great. I love Zachary Quinto, and I love him, his Spock. I really do. But, like, that's a Spock is a totally different character than Kirk, and Quinto's a totally different actor than William Shatner. It's just, like, you put him in an impossible position. Nobody was going to be happy with that. And he could have done something so effective, which is basically Spock, when Spock gets really upset, he usually gets cold and, like, really, really, like, icy calm. But they kept having Spock have these moments where he'd get super angry, both in the first one and in the second one. And at least in the first one, I understood why he was getting so angry and why his control broke. Because, you know, his mom died and his planet was destroyed, and you'd have to be a robot not to freak out about that. But this time I'm like, really? And I guess the reason that they thought that this would work is because then we would feel how strongly Spock felt for Kirk, and he puts Kirk on that level. But it just didn't work for me. And so the rest of the movie, I'm like watching Spock run around and like hit things. And I was just like, no, no. And yeah, so from that moment on, I was basically just seething. And the rest of the movie just made me angry, especially since they undermine Kirk's death immediately. I mean, we had a whole conversation with Mike getting angry that they undermined Spock's death. At least they took a whole movie to buy back Spock. They took like 5 minutes and a magic tribble to like bring back Kirk and totally undermine that entire scene. Terrible. So like the first three quarters of that movie, I was fine with it. I mean, I don't think it was particularly great, but I wouldn't say that it was bad in any way. But then like that, what, 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes ruined the whole movie for me. And now I think about it and I just get mad.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction to the bringing Kirk back to life when I saw it in the theater. You know, at first I was like, are they going to do this? Are they actually going to kill him? I mean, that'd be a really bold move for this franchise to go down. But at the same time, I was like, well, the whole point of rebooting this was so that you can regain that dynamic. So to, you know, throw that away here in movie number two does not seem like something that they would do. So I knew that he was going to come back. I just knew it. But the difference that I see, and I don't like it, but the difference that I see between this and the Star Trek III scenario, while yes, we have an entire movie to bring back Spock in that case, here, at least it was part of the design of this movie. So good or bad, you can hang it on this movie. Whereas the Star Trek III thing, one of the things that makes me very upset about it is you've got these people like Nicholas Meyer in there, and they're busting their asses to make the best Star Trek that's ever been. And then, you know, the Star Trek III crew come in and they're like, yeah, but, you know, Spock, so let's just undo all that. And
I see that.
And yeah,
I see what you're saying. I mean, it's not, it still doesn't.
And Meyer is left just hanging there like, really, guys? Then like, why did I even bother? You know, I mean, I'm simplifying things here, but you know,
my issues with playing off of the end of Wrath of Khan so heavily is that it doesn't feel like they've earned it. I mean, because we had, you know, 80 episodes, the animated series, and, you know, a movie and almost a whole second movie before we got to that point. We knew these characters. We knew these versions of these characters. And it was emotionally resonant. And with this one, we barely know this Kirk. I mean, in all reality, Spock, because I'll argue that Spock is the main character of these, we barely know Kirk. We barely know his motivations. we understand that it's kind of questionable why he would sacrifice himself, but it's not like some grand gesture. It's just, oh, I gotta fix this, and I'm gonna fix it. And then the whole Khan thing, like screaming Khan, it doesn't make any sense because Khan was also a pawn. Like, it's Marcus. He should be screaming about RoboCop, not about Khan. Because Marcus started it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the screaming of the Khan, to me, it's a little too on the nose. It doesn't work. You know, I was perfectly okay with them recreating the end of Wrath of Khan. And I think, you know, sort of, you know, mirroring that but flipping the roles and everything is really interesting, you know, for this story. And I think it's really effective. I think when, you know, he yells Khan, that's just kind of like, you know, because even in the original, you know, when he yells Khan, it's almost kind of a, you know, campy moment where people are like, yeah, look at him like yelling Khan. I mean, there's literally.
But he's also doing it to put on a show. Because he knows he hasn't been defeated.
Yeah. I mean, who's putting on a show?
Kirk.
I guess.
Because he knows that the Enterprise is going to come back around and pick him up. In
but
20
he's,
minutes, you
he's
know?
Still he's still really mad in that moment, you know. I mean, the rage in his eyes, I think, is, you know, I don't know.
He's, yeah, maybe.
And see, to me, the most effective part of the first one is not the Khan moment at all. Although I would say that's the most iconic. It's when Kirk is like looking through the glass and he just says no. Like really brokenly and really sadly and like really quietly. That to me is the most, like, I was already crying like a little girl at that point, but like that was the moment where I was like, like just completely lost it. And they didn't even, yeah, no, I didn't get that. And the worst part is that I don't know about Chris Pine so much, though I think he's a perfectly good actor, but I'm sorry, Zachary Quinto is an excellent actor. He could have sold something, you know, but no, the whole thing doesn't work for me. I'm sorry. I even think switching them is kind of interesting. And like, you could have found some interesting stuff in there in a different way. And I don't even know like a better way to execute that where I wouldn't have felt it was cheap and cynical. It didn't work. Or at least it didn't work for me. Like, I don't like ending a perfectly fine movie watching experience, like pacing through my apartment or raging is not the way I like to end my movie experiences. So, no to that.
Now, there's a point in Into Darkness where I literally took off my hat and I did throw it to the ground.
Did you stomp on it?
I did not stomp on it, but I did literally throw my hat to the ground, and that was when Quinto Spock calls up Nimoy Spock to get no information from him. What did you think about bringing Nimoy back to say, hey, Khan was a bad guy? Why would he even think that Nimoy knew Khan?
To be fair, I saw this after Leonard Nimoy died.
True. So my
response is basically like, yay. So that really had nothing to do with how I would think it works from a purely storytelling perspective. For me, it was just like, there he was, and I was so excited to see him, and I didn't even really listen to their conversation. I was mostly just like being like, I miss Leonard Nimoy. So I don't know if I'm a good person to answer that question.
See, I would disagree with them, there being no reason for it and them not getting any info out of it, because to me, even I as a viewer got information out of that conversation, because at that point in the story, the events had been going about in such a way that I was thinking that they might do a turn here and make it so that the movie ended with Khan and Kirk becoming allies. Like, maybe
I had that feeling too. That's
maybe
true.
Maybe they would not go just the Khan is bad, he's evil, and he's doing bad stuff route. Maybe they were going to twist it and say, like, Khan is a victim of circumstance. And sure, he's done some terrible things, but he's had just as many terrible things done to him. And now he, while maybe not a good guy, is going to team up with the quote-unquote good guys in order to take down the quote-unquote bad guys. And then at the end, they're just going to be like, you know what? I was wronged, and this society is not for me, and I'm going to this planet over here, SETI Alpha 5, where I can just live my life, doing my thing, away from the rest of you, because you all are crazy. And, you know, I was thinking that that might be what they were doing at that point. And then they call up Spock, and Spock Prime, and young Spock is like, hey, what's the deal with this guy? And old Spock is like, don't trust that dude, because he is going to stab you in the back as soon as he can. And I'm like, okay, so they're not doing that. But, I mean, that's the question that, that young Spock had at that moment, too, because he was suspicious, you know? And to me, it doesn't seem at all strange to think that he would know who Khan was, especially if we're going to, you know, work under the assumption that Khan is who he is and has the same history and all that stuff, and he was essentially Hitler. So people are going to know who he was, right? I mean, they're going to know. They're going to know who he was. So, I mean, that's not a weird thing to me. I don't know. I mean, they've already talked about in the first movie how the timeline is going to correct itself and things are going to, you know, happen that happened before and all this other stuff that doesn't make any sense. So I think it's perfectly valid for young Spock to throw a Hail Mary to old Spock and see, you know, what happens.
It, unless like old Spock was like the fourth person he called, maybe that.
Why?
But then he's just like, oh, so how did you beat him before? Okay, so they beat him because Khan doesn't use three-dimensional thinking when they're in a nebula.
No.
That's how they beat him.
See,
and all they do to beat him this time is to be like, oh, well, we'll replace his frozen friends with actual bombs and beam them over to his ship. There's nothing that Prime Spock did that affected the movie in any way.
You're thinking about it way too literally. You know, he's not like, how did you beat him before? And then Spock like takes out a dry erase board and starts like drawing X's and O's. You know, he's like, how did you beat him before, like, philosophically, you know? Like, what is it? What is the mindset that you need to be in to beat this guy? And I can see old Spock saying, like, you need to start thinking like he's thinking and know where his weaknesses are in terms of his logic and, you
but
know.
But that's how you beat anybody.
Fine.
You don't need to. You don't.
Fine, but
that's the Vulcan way. That's how you would beat anybody. Is a Vulcan.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But you know, to me, it's like Khan is super smart, right? He's got weaknesses. Old Spock may have seen weaknesses that young Spock hasn't seen yet. You know,
I didn't so much have a problem with them bringing back Khan, although I don't know why he was inexplicably white, but I didn't have so much of a problem with them bringing back Khan because I thought that could be kind of interesting because, and here's where, like, I was spoiled in the fact that I knew he was Khan. So, like, it wasn't like it was a big reveal for me or anything. I mean, this is the internet age. I could not avoid it. But it could have been cool to show that what went down with Khan and Kirk before was because of circumstance.
Yep.
Like, they had an understandable conflict both times. And whereas in this universe, Kirk and Khan have never met each other. They don't necessarily need to be in conflict. It would have been kind of cool to have it like be like, okay, Khan wasn't necessarily irredeemably evil. Circumstances put him in a point where he did evil things. And then like switch that to like, okay, now that he's in new circumstances, he reacts differently. But instead, they just kind of made him cartoonishly evil, and that to me is boring. And then plus, Benedict Cumberbatch just seeing how low he could get his voice and how slow he could talk, and I was supposed to be, I don't know, terrified or something. That just,
well, no,
all
no.
of that didn't work for me.
That was for the IMAX. I saw it in IMAX, and like when he, there were some lines that he said that shook the seats. It was like, whoa, okay.
I mean,
you think your world is safe?
Yeah, it's like, whoa.
I thought Cumberbatch was awesome. You know, I had no problem with his performance. I thought it was great. You know,
nah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that guy, yeah, he's pretty badass. Yeah,
he's a good actor, and his voice is awesome. I just felt like it was all very, very overdone.
I mean, I guess so, but when you're following up with a character who was originated by Ricardo Montalban, I mean, how big is too big? I don't think that exists. I don't think there's a scale there for...
There weren't enough pecs.
I guess so.
For my taste to replace Ricardo.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just... Yeah, no, I don't like that movie.
Well,
I don't like it.
Before we finish up, do you want to touch on Carol Marcus at all?
I would rather just pretend that she didn't happen, because I'm really sad about it, because the original movie, Carol Marcus, was so awesome and so badass, and then in this movie, they just undermine her at every possible point. The only reason she's important is because she's the daughter of the antagonist, and... I don't know. Apparently, she feels like getting undressed all the time, and I don't understand.
One time, and there
okay,
was a reason
how,
for
how
it.
Many,
but whatever.
How many minutes do you think she was on screen in that movie?
She had a bigger role than Uhura, right?
I know, and that is a problem too.
Why?
But because she's not part of the crew.
Why can't she be?
If they wanted to make her a part of a crew, then we could talk about that in a different way. But she's not, and apparently they're just going to drop her again.
I mean, well, that actually, there's evidence to suggest that that might not be true. But
I
there's
hope
an article
it's not
today
true.
That says that she yeah. doesn't know if she's in the movie.
She says she doesn't know, but she thinks they're going in an interesting direction. I mean, she knows what's going on with the movie, which means they're probably keeping it a secret. But she is going to.
Well,
show up.
I really hope they don't just. Make her disappear in the way that they made her disappear in the original movies.
Well,
but
I agree with
it's
that
just,
too.
It's just frustrating because in Wrath of Khan, she's a scientist and she's a badass and she's on equal footing with Kirk. And I love that version of Carol Marcus. And this Carol Marcus could have been that. And they just undercut her in a very large way. And I wanted her to be awesome, and she gets more hero moments than Uhura does. Like, she disarms a bomb and saves McCoy. Like, that's awesome, but
I don't have
potential
any
potential wasted.
To me it makes sense that she would have more hero moments than Uhura and more whatever than Uhura, because she's a character who was added to this story for story purposes, whereas Uhura is a box which needs to be checked. You know, so yeah, you're gonna give.
I just
her
wish
something
it didn't
to
have to be Uhura versus Carol Marcus.
It is an Uhura like, versus Carol Marcus.
Except for you brought up Uhura.
I'm just saying that
like you
like, could have
brought up
have...
Chekhov, you could have brought up Sulu, but you brought up Uhura specifically. It's
fair.
Like, why do I have to?
Fair
to,
enough,
to be
but,
like
I mean,
this
we
female character versus this
well,
female
we,
character.
We
why can't they both
about,
be awesome?
Fair enough, but we were talking about you know the fact that this female character. Is, you know, she's one of the few female characters and she doesn't have anything to do or whatever. And it's
well,
like,
I
well,
think she has stuff to do. I just don't think it's executed great.
Okay.
Like, for instance, I thought it was cool that she went up against her dad, but then it was like, never mind, Carol, bye. Like, they undercut her there, too. It's like she has this awesome speech and she's trying to get through to her dad and he, like, listens to her, pats her on the head, and then just, like, beams her over. It's exactly like what they did with Uhura, where they're like, she's going to speak Klingon, and she's going to walk out. She's like, this is why you brought me. Let me do it. And then she goes out there, and they're like, okay, never mind. Benedict Cumberbatch is going to come in from nowhere and suddenly kill hundreds of Klingons by himself. Woo. It's like they set it up, and then they don't let him fulfill it. And it's almost more annoying than if they just didn't set it up at all. Because they set them up and then they have them fail.
I don't know. I guess I never
rant.
I guess I never really saw it as failure. Just you know, sort of like a complication of you know action or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like she does.
Yeah,
speak
I
to
mean,
the Klingons.
I don't think it's Uhura's fault or anything. It's just like, how cool would it have been if she had succeeded in that mission?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I would have no problems then. I'd be like, cool, she did something. I can point to a scene and be like, Uhura did something and it mattered.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But they set it up and then they knock it down. And when I was live tweeting it, I'm like, okay, Uhura's doing something. And I think I even hashtagged it as cautiously optimistic. And then I was like, wah, wah. Just like, dang it. Like, it's so awesome that they have her be fluent in all these languages, and she's clearly very, very capable, and then she's just, nah. Anyways, sorry.
No. That's why we bring you on.
Yeah. Mm, to rant.
I'm just sitting here grinning. I love it.
So, all right, both of these movies, they're the two that exist. And what are your thoughts on them as
overall?
Sort of like a, yeah, overall.
The first one is a perfectly fun, decent movie that I like and would rewatch and enjoyed. I don't think it hits the heights of some of the best Star Trek movies, but I think that's a pretty high bar. I'd say most of them don't hit those heights. If what I'm hearing from about the TNG movies is true, those ones don't hit it either. So I don't think I would probably place it. Like if you had to have me rate all of the movies I've seen so far, Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock and Voyage Home and Undiscovered Country for me are all like right up there, and then everything else is just a little bit below, and then for me Into Darkness is just at the bottom of that pile with Star Trek V. It's not like they're irredeemably bad or not watchable. I think they're both very watchable movies. I just when they're put next to the other movies, they're not nearly as fun to watch, and at least the other movies didn't make me rage in my home and shake my fist at the sky. So Into Darkness has to be at the bottom of the pile for that.
Fair enough. All right.
I'm excited to see where they go. This is the frustrating part, is I think they have all of the elements. The casting, we haven't really talked about it, but the casting is pretty perfect. I would say mm-hmm. that they don't really nail Chekhov, but I think that that's more to do with the fact that they don't really give him Chekhov lines. I mean, he hasn't mentioned Russia once. That's a failure. But, like, the casting is great. When I finished up Into Darkness, I was looking back. I'm like, every single moment that really worked for me was McCoy-related. Like, Carl Urban's awesome. Zachary Quinto's awesome. Chris Pine is fine. Like, the casting is good. So they have the characters there, and I am optimistic that they can pull off a really awesome movie, and I'm hoping that this next one is just going to blow our minds.
Aren't we all?
Now, let's pretend that Justin Lin is out there listening to this episode when it comes out. What would you tell him? What do you want out of Star Threek?
Star Threek? Is that what he called it?
Yeah, you replace the E with a three.
Oh, gosh. okay. Don't call it Star Threek. How's that?
I would
that
disagree
was our
with
name
that,
for
but
it.
Whatever. All right.
No, I mean, just the most important thing for an ensemble movie like this and for an action movie that is supposed to be about bigger things is balance. Make sure that your characters are balanced. Make sure that the action and the characterization and the, I guess, philosophy of Star Trek are all balanced, and that is a tall order, and good luck.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for one more look at the original series. Hope you're having fun with Deep Space Nine.
I am. In immense amounts of fun.
All right. So where can people find you on the internet?
Easiest place is Twitter @FirstTimeTrek. You can also check out my podcast, Women at Warp, also on Trek FM. And we have a website, womenatwarp.com, where you can go to find out everything to do with that show.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for joining us. We don't appreciate it.
Never.
And yeah, we're welcome back anytime.
Thanks.
Well, that was great having Andy on again. I always enjoy it when she's on and ranting. So, but that's not the only topic we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So now we're going to have to spend like a half an hour talking about these Star Trek comics when I could be reading Star Wars comics.
Yes.
I hope the listeners appreciate the sacrifices that we're making to bring this moderately entertaining podcast to them.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The Orb.
Also, the original title of this episode was A Matter of Breeding, which, when we talk about things feeling TNG-ish, that could have been a Riker episode.
The Ready Room.
It's about people and feelings and emotions. It's about philosophy. It's about the future. It's about hope. It's about glory. It's about intellectual promise. That's what Axanar is about. It is not a story about pew, pew, pew. I promise you that.
To the journey!
Well, you telling me that I need to make love to this alien woman or she's going to die? Well, for king and country, you know what I'm saying?
Right, only on Star Trek.
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But you would never pick up on that based on the way that it plays out, aside from the fact that they explicitly tell you in the dialogue, you know?
The 602 Club.
The prequels are the most autobiographical works that Lucas has done. Because if you follow Anakin's arc, he comes onto the scene, nobody's seeing him coming, and then he's a wunderkind, but he doesn't know what to do with it, and he's overwhelmed and feels a bit trapped.
Literary Treks.
Deep Space Nine, among all the Star Trek series, is the one that really, over time, and I'm talking about now on the television series, not just in the books, changed the most.
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
My absolute favorite thing about this episode is that this is a love potion only if it's between a man and a woman. They make it explicitly clear that if you touch two men or two women, they just become really good friends.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, SoundCloud, or you can just stream from the website. Visit trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. If you'd like to contact us, share your thoughts on today's show, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose Send a Show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab in the left-hand column of any page that sends the voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners at our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook group at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. You can find Mike on Twitter at mumbles3k or at comtrackstars. And you can find him on commentarytrackstars.com, where he does an off-topic show. And you can find him on Commentary Trek Stars right here on Trek FM. You can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE, and on various other places around the internet. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of those famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and the latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. We'd also like to thank Richard Rutledge Jr. and Renee Roberts for being our associate producers this week by supporting us on Patreon. You can find Richard on Twitter at RUT8972 and Renee at MRES_1701. And if you want to join them, helping keep us in orbit, you can also support us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as an associate producer on our shows. If you go to the website, you'll also find out where the donations can go, to things like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for our shows, and upgrading our equipment. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm, so check it out. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.